Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, woo.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 23. This is Bowl Preview Part 2. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson coming to us live from the slopes.
Live from the slopes. That's right. Keystone, Colorado, where it was toasty 44 degrees yesterday, which is it's just murderous. You bring your coat. You bring as if you were in watching the Cleveland Browns on a shitty 5-degree, 25, you know, mile an hour day. You bring all of that gear and then you get here and it's 44 degrees and you just want to ski in a t-shirt.
Yeah, speaking of which, I used to snowboard occasionally, but I can never do that because of my knee. I'll essentially tear my ACL again. So no slopes for me, but I did just venture out to Cleveland for now 5-0 out there. The Factory of Sadness was, I mean, it was as sad as you could envision for an 0-13 team playing at home. And usually they're up for the Ravens, and it's a good crowd early in the year, but there's no hope. Parking lots were empty. The stadium was half empty. Luckily we had a box, and my girl came with me. I met a bunch of my boys out there. My girl saw zero live plays. She didn't see the field. We went into the box. She sat on the couch. We sat in the box, grabbed a drink and something to eat. And I was watching like the first 10 minutes. I was like, this is the worst football game I've ever seen. Went right to the club bar. And then just drank there and watched Red Zone and the Ravens game. And then eventually left, went to a bar. And I was with some people that are in the top 10 right now in the Super Contest. And they had the Patriots. I had the Patriots and then added to the Patriots for the second half. And there was a group of Steelers fans behind us. And so we were going extra bonkers. So that was the highlight of the trip.
Do you know what I appreciate about DeShone Kizer? I appreciate that he's not fumbling in his own territory anymore. He's just flat out fumbling in his own end zone, right? That just makes it so much easier to lose the money.
Yeah, well, normally he fumbles in the red zone. They get down to the red zone, you know, or some, you know, now he's just the whatever. Here's the touchdown. I don't regret the play. I mean, I regret whenever I play the Browns because they never cover for me. I'm 0-7 playing the Browns this year. But the Ravens were flat as hell. I mean, and then the Browns just don't let you. But be jealous because I'm going down to Baltimore again to see a Ravens game, and they play the Colts this weekend. So I'm getting to see the best NFL games of the season within a 6-day period.
That's all. There's always that Baltimore angst whenever they get to play the Colts, who abandon them in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I'm basically doing the circle of, you know, the ex-Browns of the Baltimore to Baltimore to playing Indianapolis. That stadium at least will be packed. Ravens, you know, win their last two, as they should. They'll go to the playoffs, and there's so much hate for Indianapolis. I mean, I'm just going to wait to play Baltimore in the second half.
Speaking of another team that plays on Saturday, you know, I was kind of flip-flopping about the NFC every week as to who I, you know, wanted to back as far as getting a future down and putting, you know, a little bit of chunk of change down and backing them up, and I finally came to the realization that it's going to be the Vikings. And I know the Vikings play on Saturday also, along with your Baltimore game. And I was just looking at the playoff picture the other day, and I thought to myself, I really would not want to be in line for the New Orleans seed at number 4, the Carolina seed at number 5, the number 1 seed held by the Eagles. It just seems like the Vikings have a much more easier path if they can contain this number 2 seed. They've already beaten the Rams, you know, who are the number 3 seed. You know, I don't care who slips in as a 6 seed. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, they've already killed the Rams, and that wasn't even a fluke. That was a genuine 24-7 beating. And I think the Vikings are the ones that deserve all the attention right now.
Yeah, I would agree. The one thing that they have to worry about is, you know, they play the Bears at home the last week, which would be a win. As long as they don't slip up this week, then they'll get that critical bye. And because if they do slip up and Carolina wins out, Carolina's the only – they'll have the tiebreaker if Carolina beat them. So they have the tiebreaker for all these other teams. But if they end up in a two-way tie with Carolina will actually take that critical two seed. So it's an important game for Minnesota. I mean, Green Bay is a they haven't been this big of a dog since 1988 against the Vikings, and the Vikings actually won outright. And but I can't play Green Bay. I mean, I don't know. Green Bay doesn't have any corners left. They don't have any. I mean, if you look at their defensive metrics, like third down conversions, red zone defense, they're dead last. I mean, none of their linebackers are. I don't know how they're going to cover anyone. Their offensive line will get crushed. They don't have any running backs left. Devontae Adams might not play. Rodgers is out. I mean, I can't find a reason to back the
Packers. I know. It seems like the 9 points is too much, though, even with everything that they've lost.
It's too high, but I can't put my money behind the Packers. Some dogs I do like this weekend. I love the Titans. That's such an overreaction, that line. I've been fading the Titans lately and have said that they're a fraud. But, I mean, this is back-to-back road games for the Rams. The Rams lost their starting corner, which the Seahawks couldn't take advantage of that last week because their offensive line couldn't give Wilson time, and Donald and their defensive front dominated that game. But the Tennessee has a legit offensive line. They'll be able to establish the run, which Seattle couldn't do. But the Rams' weakness is their run defense. Their run defense is awful. So I think Tennessee will be able to run the ball, set up play action. Off the run, they'll be able to get time and exploit some of the questions that I now have about the Rams' secondary with Webster out for the year. And that line's just a straight-up overreaction. Mariota's been a lot better at home. And then another dogs I like, I mean, you tried to convince me this the other week, but I think I might play the Broncos. I think their defensive line will dominate the game just like they did against the Colts. And then the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets. I was going to say, the one for me is the Falcons getting six going into New Orleans. It's just looking like shit against the Bucs, you know, not covering and letting them hang around and then going in covering six and possibly winning that game is just total Falcons move.
Yeah, the game's always close. I mean, man, three of the last 15 have gone to overtime. They always play one possession game. The line's definitely inflated. Now, the spot favors New Orleans. They have revenge from 2 weeks ago. Atlanta's on a short week, back-to-back road games. But I played Atlanta against the Saints 2 weeks ago. I got them plus one. I said the line, you know, I make this essentially a pick. If you look at the net yards per play, they're essentially even. And I said I make it, you know, at home, I make Atlanta minus three, which is where it closed at. So if you assume Atlanta's minus three at home, you know, and you want to give, even if we want to give slightly more merit to New Orleans' home field, but I think that's slightly negated because Atlanta's fine indoors in the dome too. But the line should be around three or four. So it's definitely, there's definitely value with Atlanta. And, you know, it feels like it'll be another close game between those two teams. The reason I like the Jets is I think they'll be able to run the ball. So Chargers run defense, I think, is 31st in the NFL in yards per rush. Only the Patriots are worse. But I like the Bills, too. I think that line's overinflated. I think the Bills will just be able to hand it off. And, you know, they should have been that game in New England, in New Buffalo, should have been a lot closer. They kept turning it over in the red zone. But I think the Jets will be able to run the ball because Perryman's out. Their defensive tackle's out. And the one thing I worry about is Bryce Petty only knows how to run out of shotgun against that pass rush. But but Rivers at one point in his career was 15-2 on the road in December. But now he's 0-7 straight up in his last seven. And I think that's a result of him getting older. His arm's getting weaker. His arm gets fatigued towards the end of the year. He lost at the Browns last December. That's their only win in forever on Christmas Eve. The Browns are 0-28, I think, on non-Christmas Eve. So maybe they win on Christmas Eve this week.
But just from a lack of motivation standpoint, the season hinged upon the Kansas City game?
Not really. I mean, they still have they need other shit to happen. I mean, they didn't win out. And I think that they'll probably still find a way to win the game. But they need to win out, and then, you know, they'll need Tennessee to, you know, potentially, they'll need Tennessee losses, or they'll need the Ravens to lose two, or, you know, their best bet is Tennessee losing out because they play the Rams and the Jaguars. So if they went out, then they could potentially pass them. So they're not completely done, but yeah, it's deflating because they win that. It's definitely a flat spot on the road again, even though they've had extra prep. But I mean, that was for the division. And they are, if they tie, even if they tie the Chiefs have every tiebreaker in the division. And I think that it's still potentially a flat spot going up to New York in December. You know, you're hoping for other things to happen, scoreboard watching, and Rivers has just been bad outdoors on the road in December over the last 3 years. So, that's kind of the high level NFL rundown. But I think with my friends who I was with last week, I think they might still be in the top 10 or 20. So I'm going to go out to Vegas on New Year's Eve, for New Year's Eve. And I think I'm dragging you with me. I think I convinced you of that. So we'll be out in Vegas. I already hear some hesitation in that breath. We'll be out. I'll be out in Vegas at least from the 30th until like the 3rd or 4th. Have you changed your mind?
No. I've got every reason to go. I'm just trying to figure out if I can go, when I'm going to go. And there's other people that want to make plans for me. So we'll see if I want to make it out there. We'll see. I should, because the biggest games I'm going to bet on this year are going to be the January 1st bowl games. I mean, as we go through these bowl season, I mean, I'm glad FAU got to the house two nights ago. I'm glad La Tech was such an easy winner last night that I could have fallen asleep in the second quarter. But really the biggest, you know, chunk of change wise, how much I'm going to be betting on games. It's really getting towards the end of the year that I feel more strongly about these games, you know, than I do right now. So I've got season win total tickets I got to cash. I'd like to play my biggest games where you can hand over the ticket and get the, you know, get to the window, get, you know, your cash back immediately instead of have it tied up in an offshore account. So definitely there's reasons to get out there. But, you know, last time I looked at a flight getting to Vegas on New Year's Eve or the day before, it was somewhere around like $800. So we'll see what I can pull off.
I mean, I'll take care of the hotel. You can find your way there. That wasn't the confidence I was looking for, by the way. But if you think about the hotel and what you would have paid for in the flight, you're pretty much breaking even if I take care of the hotel. So yep. I'll make sure he's out there, audience, but we'll see. You mentioned some of the other bowl games. The last two nights have been snoozers. I don't know how they didn't go over, by the way. One team scoring 50. Like La Tech, what was there, 9 points in the second half? SMU was horrendous. They just kept turning it over in their own territory. Sonny Dykes there off to a great start. You surprised, or, you know, the Boise result was surprising to me. We hung on with Marshall, luckily. But any other results from the first seven bowls that surprised you or you want to hit on?
Well, I'm surprised Georgia State, Western Kentucky stayed under the total. They tried to make a little run there at the end. Western Kentucky is worse than I ever expected.
You know what did it in was that play at the end of the half where the ref set the pick and then it would have been a touchdown and then they reviewed it. His knee was down and then they missed the field goal and oh my God, it was sickening. Have you heard about this?
Yeah. But no, I was just going to say that first Saturday of games, I think in the column we went like 2-3. And at the same time, those three losses that I had, I was 12-4 in turnovers against me. So, you know, ever since then, everything's been fine. Everything's gone as expected, as I've written up. But it's just killer when a team comes in and they're just immediately dropping the ball down the ground, you know, in their own territory.
Yeah, that wasn't fun to watch. I can tell you that there's this one of my friends has this system that he told me about. That he's been betting, and he was betting the entire time that we were in Cleveland this weekend. And he bets the system now. It's a bowl betting system. I don't think that there's any causality, but so I don't think it will work long term. But it is now. Let me pull up the actual stats. It's 46-4 since last bowl season. He bets the under in the first half, and if it hits, that's it. And if it doesn't hit, he doubles up in the second half. For the second half under. And so a loss, when I say 46-4, a loss is actually, you know, three times because you doubled up. Mm-hmm. But it's only lost four games out of the last 50. So I'm going to go back and look further. I don't usually believe in those things unless there's like a reason, unless I know, okay, well, if it doesn't, what would the causality be? But yeah, I was with someone that he was just heavy betting that, which was pretty funny. So I'm actually going to look back into historical results and see how it plays out. But anyway, let's get into, well, before we get into the, we're going to cover today in today's podcast, we're going to go through 9 bowls. So we were going to record last night and cover 10, but neither of us had any feel on the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl in Tropicana Field between Temple or FIU. I didn't play anything there. No. Did you?
No, I actually had somebody text me today and say, Sharps are on FIU. I said, really, I think the Sharps are laying off this game because it's properly rated. And I mean, come on, it's Temple and FIU. I mean, I think I took Temple in the write-up, and I mean mostly because of their quarterback change at the end of the year. I'm not going to get too heavy into it because, you know, no one's going to – the game will be over by the time everybody listens to this. But, you know, it is kind of trickling down from 7 down to 6.5, but we'll see what happens tonight.
Yeah, and I – yeah, I mean, I actually took FIU in, like, my pools, and I thought they would have more motivation, but I don't see much in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, Temple's head coach was he was a defensive coordinator at FIU, and he's really trying to make a name for himself in recruiting down there. So I found a little bit of more motivation within Temple than I did with FIU with Butch Davis.
Fair enough. I'm staying away, so we'll not have any action tonight. And now the bowls will start heating up to Christmas. Now Christmas is approaching. So let's start with Friday's bowl, and that's the Bahamas Bowl. And that's 12:30 in the afternoon, which is always fun. Eastern time, and that's obviously in Nassau, Bahamas. UAB versus Ohio, that line's now down to 6.5. Over under was 57. Not sure where that sits now. I think we disagree on this game, so I'll let you build your case first. I'm already on UAB plus 7.5. Do you want to give your thoughts here?
Yeah, not a lot of people, and I did actually on the Sports Action app. I did take them at 10.5 on the Oprah on 5 dimes, but I'm coming back on Ohio whenever this thing stops to move, and it's going to be for much, you know, what I put in the first place on UAB, and you know, that was an opener. And once I really got into the advanced stats on this, I just looked at Ohio being able to shut down UAB from a lot of standpoints, and for the fact that UAB has not been successful this year on shutting down teams rushing, and that is Ohio's bread and butter, is the rush. That's what Solich wants to do. He likes to establish it, e-clock, and you know, the Bobcats, you know, they're not very good in success rate and as far as it goes in defending the rush. And then I looked at their last two games, and a lot of their success rate numbers were really down against Florida State, where they really just didn't even show up. They didn't get off the bus. And then they had an against the spread push against UTEP, which it made me think. You know, has UAB gotten to the point in their season where they already feel successful? Like they already feel like they've accomplished something, and now they're just down at the Bahamas Bowl with their feet up, you know, drinking a umbrella drink, and they're pretty happy with what they've done with the season. Do they feel like it's complete? Because, you know, I feel like there's a little bit more motivation there with Ohio and the way that they ended the season, having negative 5 turnovers against them to lose to Akron and lose the division title there in the MAC. And then UAB, I think, is completely complacent with how they've done this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that Ohio, first of all, has struggled in bowls, as have a lot of MAC teams. They're 2-8 all time. They've struggled recently. And UAB, I think, will get that motivation back there. I mean, their school's never won a bowl game. And from a matchup perspective, yes, I agree that, and I know you've touched on this in some of your write-ups, that UAB's rush offense is a horrendous matchup for, Ohio's rush offense is a horrendous matchup for UAB's rush defense. I mean, Ohio is 12th in the nation, averaging 5.6 yards per carry, and UAB allows close to 4.5 yards per carry, around 70th in the country. However, Ohio's leading rusher is doubtful. Their second leading rusher is questionable. Their second leading receiver is questionable. They have injuries on the offensive line. So I think that advantage is negated. Given Ohio's lack of success in bowl games, UAB's desire to capture that program's first ever bowl win to kind of cap off a magical season, I had to take the 7.5.
Yeah, I was really sad because UAB was a team we were riding for a long time, and then that performance against, I'm sorry, Florida, and how they ended up the year was just not the UAB team that played the previous 10 games of the year. So we'll see where they're at.
Fair enough. Well, if you come back on Ohio, maybe Ohio wins by 7. We both hit. So
that'd be nice.
The next game is also on Friday, and this is the Idaho Potato Bowl. And that's between Central Michigan and Wyoming. Over-under was right around 45. The line has been all over the place, and now I think it sits at Wyoming minus 3, and that's as a result of the announcement that Josh Allen, the Wyoming quarterback and potential future NFL quarterback, will be playing in this game. I don't have a great feel on this game either way. I hate generally backing MAC teams, but Central Michigan has been on a roll. And, you know, Wyoming finished the season on a dud. How effective is Allen going to be? I don't know if I'll get involved in this game. I know that you like Central Michigan. Do you still like the Chips and why?
Yeah, I'm not going to ignore. See, the problem is I think I'm the only person that likes Central Michigan because I see all the money. I see all the tickets. I see everything coming in on Central Michigan while this line has gone from essentially a pick all the way up to Wyoming -3.5 in a couple spots. So immediately that would raise your attention and think, well, Wyoming's, you know, this number's running like crazy and the bigger money must be coming in on Wyoming. And I haven't been able to make a case as to why. I mean, Central Michigan's 12th in the nation in explosiveness and Wyoming's 113th in the nation at defending it. And this is a really bad matchup for Wyoming. And I don't understand. Their offense hasn't been able to do anything this year as to where Shane Morris has been just unbelievable, like a godsend for the Chips. And you know, when you look into the numbers, it doesn't match up at all that Wyoming should be able to even hang with Central Michigan. Now, I've heard the argument that the blue turf really affects teams that have never seen it before, and Wyoming has played there before. But yeah, but I think they've seen the field one time in the last 2 years. So it's not like they have that much of an advantage having already played on this field before. You know, Wyoming's defense is pretty average. There's nothing special about them. I keep hearing about how this game is going to go under, which it probably will. I think it could be just one team blowing out the other, but you know, I mean, Wyoming, they're 42nd in adjusted sack rate, which means they're not going to get to Shane Morris. They're 48th in passing S&P, which means Shane Morris is going to be able to sling it around whenever he wants. And they're 70th in limiting explosiveness through the air, which means Shane Morris is going to be able to throw it wherever he wants, whenever he wants. So I don't understand why the Wyoming line is going up to 3 while all this, I guess we could say, peasant money is coming in on Central Michigan, because somebody's got a big enough wallet to move this line all the way up to 3. But I'm sticking with the math, and I'm sticking with Central Michigan.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, 3.5, it gets awful enticing, so maybe I'll take a look. And you've said all year on our podcast that the Wyoming defense is a different animal at home, right? They are significantly worse on the road and or, I would assume, on a neutral field. So I don't think you can expect the same Wyoming defense that you might see if they were playing at Laramie. So good thoughts there. The next bowl on Saturday, we have 3 bowls on Saturday, the first of which is the Birmingham Bowl, and that is in, obviously, Birmingham, Alabama, between Texas Tech and South Florida. This line was sitting at South Florida -2.5. I think it has creeped up to 3. You know, I hate backing Texas Tech. I hate so much about that team. You know, and I know that you're going to tell me their defense has been better. But I might think their defense is still trash. I actually might play Texas Tech here on, you know, and there's nothing from a numbers perspective that I can find. It's just that I don't think South Florida will care about this game after, you know, their preseason expectations were so high and now they're back in the same bowl and playing Texas Tech. I just think that they might come out completely flat, and you can see them potentially get blown out here. I'm worried about their offensive line, how they're going to stop South Florida if they do care, but I might just close my eyes and bet this as a pure situational spot. What do you see here?
Yeah, I definitely think this is – I'm going to take Texas Tech pre-kick, and I'm going to be on them for a number of reasons that I'll tell you about. But really, I think this is maybe a live betting dream. I think this may be a 7-0, 14-0, 14-7, 14-14. I think this may be a game where you could get at least +3 on both sides, maybe +7 on both sides. I think it's going to swing pretty heavily in this game. As far as pregame goes, South Florida, they lost to Central Florida. They didn't get to contend for the AAC championship game, which was their goal. I mean, that's South Florida. Everybody talked about South Florida and can they make the playoff? And have you seen the schedule? That's what the talk was at the last week of August this past year. And so they didn't achieve any of those goals. And they get sent to a Birmingham Bowl where they went last year. Now, they beat the hell out of South Carolina last year, you know, by 7 points, but still it's a pretty good beating an SEC team in the Birmingham Bowl. But now you have to go back. You get the same bowl swag. I don't think the players want to be there. And I mean, I'm not a big fan of back at Texas Tech, but at the same time, their defense is better. I'm not saying it's fantastic, but when you're ranked last in the nation, there's only one way to go up, you know. And so I think the one thing Texas Tech has to look out for is that South Florida is ninth in adjusted sack rate on defense. So they're gonna be able to get to Nick Schimanek, which I love saying that. They're going to get to Nick Schimanek pretty frequently. So we're going to back Texas Tech in this one. I'm going to play it live on both sides also. But pregame, yeah, Texas Tech +3.
Yeah, I would agree that's the side. I think you do have to hold your nose. But, yeah, I mean, I think that works against them if they won the same bowl last year. So if they're going back to the same bowl but they lost it last year, you know, they can use that as a motivational angle. But, I mean, they won this bowl against the SEC team already, and I can't see them really caring. So I think we agree there. Yeah. I'm not as confident that I'll be on it as you are, but, you know, maybe I'll end up pulling the trigger. The next game on Saturday is the Armed Forces Bowl between Army and San Diego State. I think San Diego State always plays a service academy in the bowls. But San Diego State's laying, right around 6, and the line's been 6, 6.5, depending on where you look. Might even have touched 7 at some spots. I love San Diego State here, under 7. I think they'll be able to run the ball on Army. They have a preparation advantage in that, you know, Army obviously had the Army-Navy game. San Diego State has a lot of familiarity with the option. Over-under is 46. Would actually lean under there as well. Total, I did forget to mention, is the Texas Tech South Florida over-under 66.5. I think that 66.5, you only can look over there. I would actually look at the under here, and then San Diego State under 7. I think Penny should have a big day. What do you see here?
Yeah, I agree with you. First off, let's talk about Army. They just won their Super Bowl. I mean, that victory in the Snow Bowl against Navy was big for them. I mean, Commander-in-Chief Trophy. There's everything that they play for the year was to get to that point and to win that game. So what they're bringing down to this game, I'm not really sure what they have in that. I mean, it is Army. It is a service academy. They're not just going to lay up. But at the same time, they've won their biggest game of the year. San Diego State, yeah, Rocky Long, he has a long history of playing option teams and being victorious. Twice this year already against New Mexico and Air Force. I love San Diego State in the spot as well. I mean, Army is 116th in defending the rush and S&P defense. San Diego State is 5th in rushing explosiveness, and they got Rashad Penny. Rashad Penny kind of snubbed on the whole Heisman thing. He needs to work on his NFL draft stock. I could see this being the Rashad Penny show. Army is 88th in limiting rush explosiveness, and they're 125th. And power success rate on defense. Now, what that means is, when I say 125th on power rate success, that means Rashad Penny is going to get any 2 or 3 yard gain that he wants all day. They're going to be able to control the line of scrimmage. Aztecs are. They're going to be able to, dictate the pace. And and Army is not that dynamic on offense. Anyways, it's pretty hard watch. You have to really love football and fullback dives in the A-gap. But everything points to San Diego State, from defending the option to Rashad Penny running the ball on the offense. It's all about San Diego State.
I completely agree. Yeah, the only thing I'm afraid of is Army luck. I mean, that team is just
Army luck box. Right.
Yeah, horseshoes stuck up their ass.
Three and one, I think, in games below 4 points.
They won a couple by 1 point.
Yeah. 3 points or fewer, they're 3-1. So that, yeah, there's these guys. Schlockbox City.
It's crazy. So I think we agree there on San Diego State. The last bowl game on Saturday, I think we agree here again, is App State Toledo in the Dollar General Bowl. The line, I'm already in on App State +7.5, which you can no longer find. I'll double check where it is. It's around 7 everywhere, but getting juiced.
No, I don't see it. Yeah,
I think you're about to see 6.5 everywhere. Over-under is 61.5. Toledo has issues in the red zone. I think they'll still be able to score, but I think that App State's going to be able to move the ball at will on the ground behind Jalen Moore. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, this is a rematch of last year. This is the Camellia Bowl from last year, from 2016, in which App State won 31-28. There was a botched field goal, and man, I searched really hard to get it into the column to find just this one botched field goal to put it in there to show the difference in this game, but I couldn't find it anywhere on the internet. So this game was completely even last year. It was 7-7, 14-14, and then it got all the way up to 28-28. Until App State's field goal made the difference in this game. So But Toledo has been, you know, a much more dynamic, a much more offensive-minded team. They were able to move the ball like crazy against Miami. But this is all about senior quarterback Taylor Lamb versus senior quarterback Logan Woodside. Both of these guys are going to have a showcase here to do their stuff and have a rematch in a different bowl. You know, Toledo's 13th in passing. They're 5th in power success rate and 8th in passing explosiveness. Their offense is just is fantastic to watch. But at the same time, I think that number is way too high. I think it should be a lot closer to maybe 3 than it should be to a pick. Toledo has been the better team, you know, as far as who they've played, the strength of schedule that they've had this year. But the Mountaineers are 13th in rushing explosiveness, and Toledo's 97th in defending rush explosiveness. So that was what made the decision for me. I think that this, you know, the spread should be a little bit lower. I think there's value in App State. And the fact that at any moment, the Mountaineers, they're going to be able to bust a big run on Toledo is what's going to keep them in this game, at least within a score. So go out and get your sevens now.
Yeah, I mean, we've preached before on this podcast that the spread doesn't matter and think who's going to win this game. I think this is one of the exceptions, where I think the 7 and 7.5 is really valuable. And I think this will be one of the more competitive, closer bowl games. I don't think that there's much risk. I mean, there always is, but I don't think there's as much risk in this game compared to others that we've seen where one team doesn't really show up.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so if you're not in yet, you can find a 7. Make sure you grab it because it'll a very important number in a game that I think will be close and within one possession either way. We have one bowl on Christmas Eve. And this is one I don't think I'll get involved in because I can't really get a feel. I keep going back and forth. I do think I like the under, to be honest, but it's the Hawaii Bowl between Fresno and Houston. This line is just sitting at 2.5. And you have the Houston's favored by 2.5. Over under now is 49. Two defenses that I like. I can see this being a defensive battle. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, definitely like the under at, you know, it's gone up. It opened at 46. It's been sitting on 49. You definitely want to have the under 49 than a 48 if it trickles down any. But yeah, your defenses are right. Ed Oliver is what you think of when you think of Houston and their defense. He's going to be one of the top draft picks in the NFL draft. But it's actually the Fresno State defense that's better. They're 15th overall in S&P Plus. I took Fresno State in this at +2.5. It wasn't with a whole bunch of confidence, and this may be a game I play live, or probably will because it's the night of Christmas Eve. So it gets that, you know, it gets the TV on mute attention while I'm doing family activities after a full day of NFL, by the way. So, you know, Fresno has the better overall defense. They rank first in the nation in adjusted sack rate. As far as their offensive line goes, they're first in adjusted sack rate, which means their quarterback, Marcus McMarion is going to be able to throw all day on a really soft Houston secondary. That made the difference for me, is the fact that they're going to have all day. Also, one side note is, I don't think that they're, you know, not motivated to go down to Hawaii. They played Hawaii, actually, this year, so they've already been down there. It was a business trip. It was sandwiched in between, I think, like a 6-day. They had 6 days in between a game. They had to come back and go on the road for another game. So Fresno flew in, played the game, flew out. So their families didn't exactly get to go. It wasn't a vacation. It wasn't this big hoopla thing that they got to go to Hawaii. Just, I think it was November 11th, November 4th, somewhere around there. Their families actually get to go this time. So I think I don't think there are any loss of motivation because they've already played down there. But what they do know how to do is go down there and treat it like a business trip and get a victory in Hawaii and get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's because I think it'll be low scoring. I think the 3 is important. So, I mean, I think that if you like Fresno, I would keep your eye out because, you know, if it just sits at 2.5, you know, you can't, it doesn't hurt to wait if it ticks down to 2, but waiting for that 3. The one thing that really perplexes me about this game is looking at Houston's results. Like they lose like Little Sisters of the Poor, and they beat South Florida. They're just a team that is tough to figure out looking at their results. Do you have any thoughts there?
No, I agree with you. I back that up, and we'll see what happens. Houston's been hard to figure out. You know, I mean, losing to Tulsa, giving up like 800 turnovers and beating South Florida. They're hard to figure out.
Fair enough. Let's move on. There's no bowls. By the way, I think it's interesting that there's two Monday. The NFL has two games on Monday, Christmas, which is going up against the NBA, which everyone loves on Christmas. But they don't have a game on Sunday night. I mean, I don't know why. What, are they afraid of the Hawaii Bowl ratings on Christmas Eve? But anyway, there's no bowl game on Christmas, but there are three on the day after, on Tuesday the 26th, starting with the Heart of Dallas Bowl, and that is Utah versus West Virginia. That line currently sits at 6.5, juice probably gone to 7, opened at Utah minus 4.5. I'll tell you how much of a pussy I am. I teased La Tech last night. Glad I teased La Tech, but needed all those points. And I teased them with, they were under this 56, by the way. I teased them with Utah down to minus a half. So the only thing I'll be betting in this game is the second half of my teaser, having Utah to win. I can't see Utah losing this game. We've talked about how successful Utah's been in bowls. Will Greer won't play. West Virginia defense is trash. If I had to bet a side, I would bet Utah under a touchdown. What do you think here?
Yeah, and to throw on to that, recently, just a couple days ago, West Virginia's lead running back, Justin Crawford, hit over 1,000 yards this year. He declared that he's going to sit out this game because he's going to focus on prep for the NFL draft. So West Virginia's down their lead quarterback. West Virginia's down their lead running back. And I don't believe in trends and getting into trends and all that, but, I mean, Utah's just crazy in bowl games. Kyle Whittingham is 10-1 straight up in bowl games. West Virginia is 1-7 against the spread in bowl games since 2008, which most of those are whole go. So, there's definitely a lot of reasons to back up Utah here. And I have the game at 6. It's currently at 7. S&P shows it just a little bit lighter. But, you know, with all these losses, these huge losses at running back and quarterback for West Virginia, I can't see any way that they're going to win this game. And Utah should have plenty of fireworks with that new offense they have. They're 14th in passing explosiveness. And so I can't see any way that they win. I'm not sure, if you could tease it all you want, you could put this in a moneyline parlay for the day. You have to remember this is the day after Christmas. So the first two quarters that you watch this game, it could be abysmal. It could be pretty bad. So it could be a struggle, to get to light up the scoreboard. These first games afterwards, I think last year was Mississippi State and Miami of Ohio. And if I remember right, Mississippi State had a hell of a time getting their head out of their ass in St. Pete. So remember, this is the first game after Christmas and it's an early kick for them. So I lean Utah, and it's probably not a bad idea to kind of moneyline parlay them with something or maybe tease them, but they should cover the spread.
I would completely agree with you there. The second bowl game on Tuesday is the Quick Lane Bowl. And that's between Duke and Northern Illinois. This line has moved, and I was surprised how much it has moved, because Duke opened under a field goal, I believe, and now they are 5.5-point favorites over Northern Illinois from the MAC. The over-under currently sits at 47, opened at 48. I would lead under there. I think from everything that I've read from you, I should be backing Northern Illinois, which is a side that I'm exploring. You want to tell us why?
Yeah, I don't like to make a habit of backing MAC teams in bowls, but this number I think is a little bit too high. So I have a Duke minus 4. S&P Plus actually has Northern Illinois as a 3.5-point favorite in this game, which kind of opened up my eyes a little bit. Northern Illinois has played. This isn't just your average MAC team. This isn't Akron. Akron the other night came into that game in the Boca Raton Bowl and just got obliterated, but they didn't play anybody. I mean, they didn't have any stiff competition against some real Power 5 teams or even just good teams from other Group of 5 conferences. Northern Illinois has. Northern Illinois has played a very, very tough schedule outside of the MAC, and they play in the better division. So I'm not going to knock on them. When Duke is amazing. I mean, they lost 6 straight games this year and still made it to a bowl. But 3 of those losses came by a touchdown or less, but they were able to rebound and make it into this. I think the big thing for me is, both defenses are elite against passing attacks, but Northern Illinois has the better numbers against the rush. They rank 2nd in defensive rush success rate, and they're 12th in defensive rushing S&P. And that's going to be a real problem for Duke, you know, who likes to rely on that. You know, and that defensive line for the Huskies is 11th in adjusted sack rate, which means that, you know, Daniel Jones, quarterback for Duke, he's been interception prone all year, and he's probably going to give up another one here. So I think the last thing I'll make a note on this, I was laughing as I wrote this up. Special teams you should pay attention to what's going on here in the special teams. Duke, their starting punter and kicker is the same person, Austin Parker, and he was kicked off the team for an academic violation. They're going to a kicker named William Holmquist, who has a total of one PAT attempt on the year. He made it, zero field goals and zero punts on the 2017 season. So Duke is literally taking somebody who has attempted one PAT, no field goals, and no punts, and that is their special teams for this bowl game. I'm going to lean with Northern Illinois here. It may be, I think I'll just let it rise until I see it take a stop here, but definitely I'm going to be on the Husky side.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought special teams up. Duke doesn't have a great special teams anyway, but that'll be significantly worse. I mean, if you look at some of the advanced stats, Northern Illinois, their special teams is horrendous. I think their overall unit is 106th, and that explains why they lost a lot of, you know, they lost some close games this year. And yeah, they're 106th. Their field goal ranking, you know, their field goal, I think, is 108th. Kick return is 109th. I mean, across the board, they're outside of the top 100. So that might be evened out a little bit. I mean, I think Duke was in the 70s when I looked, or they're 79th. So now they're playing without their kicker punter. They actually could be in worse shape with Northern Illinois, so that kind of neutralizes the potential advantage that Duke has. One thing that I want to bring up, speaking of special teams, that I forgot to bring up in the last game with Utah, West Virginia, special teams are going to be huge in that game, and Utah has a substantial advantage in special teams. West Virginia's special teams, if you look at Football Outsiders, their special teams ranking is 109th in the country. And Utah, who always has great special teams, they probably have the best punter in college football, they're number 12. You know, so the field position, they'll have advantages in from their punting unit, their field, I mean, everything. Utah, which we already thought they're going to have advantages because Greer's out, they're starting running backs out. So Utah's, you know, defensive line and whole defense will have an advantage now. Their offense should move the ball against a bad West Virginia defense, and their special teams is a huge advantage. And then their bowl pedigree. I mean, what else can you ask for in a spot?
There's going to be shenanigans in this Duke spot, though. These two special teams for Duke and NIU. This thing's got just shenanigans written all over it.
Yeah, that's why I hate betting totals when that happens, because you could get helped in the totals. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to bet an under, you could get helped by like missed field goals, but then you could also just get crushed by terrible punts, you know, botched punts and. So, yeah, but that special team should play a big factor.
SVP should just put a quick lane bowl insert. You know, he just needs to make a space out for it in his bad beats, I can already tell.
Yeah. Have we had a horrendous beat yet? I mean, the La Tech, not getting that over. I was kicking myself for not betting the over. And then I was like, whoa, okay, glad I didn't bet that.
No, we almost avoided a pretty bad beat. If we would have had one more score in the Georgia State, Western Kentucky, that we were borderline bad beat there, so.
Yeah, we haven't had one. They're coming. Don't worry. The Moose are coming. So the last bowl that we'll cover here is the Cactus Bowl on Tuesday, December 26th. And that's between Kansas State and UCLA. This line sits under a field goal. You know, it's kind of been, you know, over under 64.5. The line has moved, you know, a little bit, but it's all, you know, I think it stayed under a field goal. You know, Kansas State opened 2.5. I think it's ticked down to 2. I don't think you'll see the 3. One thing I'll add, just because we've been talking about it over the last two bowls, is special teams. If you look at the Football Outsiders ranking, UCLA's unit is 95th in the country, and, you know, is number 1, Kansas State. So Kansas State will have an advantage on special teams. I just don't know if they'll be able to stop the UCLA passing attack. But then again, UCLA has been horrendous against the rush. I'm assuming Kansas State can just hand it off and get 5 yards of carry. But right. Don't have a strong feel in this game yet. still want to look into this some more. What do you see here?
Yeah, so you're right. Kansas State can hand the ball off and get 5 yards, but UCLA can drop Rosen back and get a little bit more than that. So this ought to be a pretty dynamic game in which, taking aside, this is the same thing with like the Fresno, the 2.5. When you see the 2.5s out there, you know, these are games I just want to live bet because you can get key numbers on both sides, and the 2.5 in the end, really, there's no difference in just taking the money line, you know, unless you think it's going to go to overtime and you got a 2-point thing, which is going to happen once this bowl season. So as far as this bowl goes, I started doing some research into Kansas State and UCLA and was reminded of a 2015 Alamo Bowl where I believe Kansas State won the game. And they were in victory formation against UCLA. They went to take a knee, and UCLA decided to just plow into the offensive line and like try to strip the ball against Kansas State's victory formation. So after the game, you know, they run across the field for the coaches, and Mora comes over there and just starts chewing ass on Bill Snyder. About you know, the way, you know, how that victory formation was all handled and everything. So I know I've got that in the write-up. But, you know, that was that whole – I think there's a GIF out there that everybody refers to with Bill Snyder where he just kind of rolls his eyes like no – he didn't get a handshake and he just kind of rolls his eyes at the end of the game. That was against UCLA. So I'm sure he hasn't forgot about this. You know, Mora has since been fired. Offensive coordinator Jed Fish has taken over. And Chip Kelly will immediately take over the second that this game is over. But, you know – I don't think this is just another game for Bill Snyder. I think he's still a little pissed off about what happened at the end of that bowl game last time he faced UCLA. Obviously, like we said before, Kansas State's going to be able to run the ball like crazy on UCLA. This is one of the worst defenses last year. They didn't improve anything this year. Again, one of the worst defenses against the rush this year. But the difference in this ball game to me is that Josh Rosen has said he's going to play. This is for the 2017 roster. He's sticking around. You know, he doesn't care about his NFL draft stock getting pumped up or anything like that. He wants to hang around and play for this team. And so I have a real problem with Kansas State's defense. You know, they're 73rd in opponents' yards per play. They're 90th in touchdowns allowed. They're 91st in third down conversions allowed. And specifically against Josh Rosen, Kansas State ranks 114th in defensive pass success rate. And Rosen is going to be able to drop back and just pick them off all day long. So I don't think the game could be Kansas State 14-0, 21-0, 24-0. Rosen and UCLA are going to be able to get back into this game. I expect monster swings because UCLA has terrible defense. And Josh Rosen is going to be able to throw on Kansas State all day. So
how's this game not go over?
Who's going to make a defensive stop? I think it's absolutely impossible. So, yeah, definitely take the over on this, and then don't worry about playing that live. Live betting otherwise, you know, you're going to be able to get both sides. But for me, I'm going to be heavily more towards the UCLA numbers than I am Kansas State.
Yeah, I think those are all valid points. I think the strongest side in this game might be, you know, either team can't stop the other team's offensive strength. And even if you see, you know, even if you're worried about UCLA's motivation, I mean, Rosen will just drop back. He'll be slinging it all over. He'll probably throw a couple bad picks, right, that'll set up short fields for Kansas State, but he'll be able to move the ball at will. So I think that this does set up for an overplay in the Cactus Bowl. So thanks for running through those 9 bowls with me, and we will record part 3. Most likely, I'm assuming, next Tuesday, the 26th, and then we'll cover off probably the rest of the bowls on the next podcast that we do. I'm assuming we'll do the rest through New Year's Day, and then maybe we'll record a special podcast, before the championship, or I don't know, but maybe that weekend when we're out in Vegas, because Cohen is going to Vegas. But we'll figure out what we'll cover off. Maybe we'll do all in part 3. Maybe we'll cut it up. But hopefully this helps all of y'all out there with some of your bowl betting. I know that so far we've been pretty good on our analysis, but these are bowls and crazy stuff happens, and I'm still fearful of the Moose, which we mentioned is coming. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch y'all later. Cheers.
Peace out.
laid back. With my mind on my money and my now money on my back. I got me some Seagram's gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in.